We continue now our treatment of Christ's third word, but zero in on the second syllable, as we are guided by Pope St. John Paul II's Theology of the Body. The Pope terms this second insight, or syllable, of Christ's third word, eschatological virginity. Eschatological virginity. Which means that earthly marriage will not exist in eternity. But be careful. John Paul does not mean what we think he means by the word virginity. Remember in the movie The Princess Bride, when Vicini kept saying, "Inconceivable." And Inigo Montoya replied, "I do not think that word means what you think it means." Well, similarly, John Paul uses the term eschatological virginity, and he does not mean what we think he means by it. Get ready for some high-level, three-dimensional thinking. What do I mean? Have you ever heard someone exaggerate a difference so much that they accidentally say, "He made a 360-degree change"? They meant to say, of course, "He made a 180-degree change." Think of a compass. A 180 is the polar opposite, north versus south, while a 360 returns you back to where you started. Well, at first sight, it seems the Pope is doing a 180, talking about virginity, which sounds like the polar opposite of marriage. But on closer inspection, John Paul really does a 360 and argues that virginity in heaven ends up looking a lot like a mystical marriage. This is how the Holy Father starts to enunciate this second syllable of eschatological virginity. The whole theology of the body, in other words, argues that regardless of whether you are in Eden or on earth or in eternity, men and women are destined to experience some kind of marriage. Even virgins will. But in each state, Eden, earth, or eternity, it is a unique sort of marriage. It is the same, but different. In order to successfully make this 360-degree turn from marriage to virginity and then back to marriage, the Pope enlists the help of some additional words of Christ, specifically in Matthew chapter 19, verses 11 and 12. There, Jesus discusses marriage, but also adds that some people do not marry because they make themselves eunuchs for the kingdom of heaven. That category of people clearly refers to priests and nuns and monks, because we are essentially voluntary eunuchs. John Paul, therefore, evaluates two key passages simultaneously. He looks primarily at Matthew 22, verse 30, where Jesus says, "At the resurrection, they neither marry nor are given in marriage." But he glances repeatedly at Matthew chapter 19, verse 12, where Jesus acknowledges others who make themselves eunuchs for the kingdom of heaven. In a very subtle but strategic argument, the Pope will do a 360, demonstrating that eschatological virginity will bear a striking resemblance to marriage. And he does this in three steps. First, he analyzes the context of Christ's words in Matthew chapter 19, verses 11 through 12. The context is key. Second, he argues that both marriage and virginity bear fruit. So they are similar in that respect. And third, he asserts that the love that motivates both marriage and virginity is spousal, the love of a husband and a wife. Again, John Paul invites us to leave behind two-dimensional, superficial thinking and attempt three-dimensional thinking that is as high as heaven, learning how to say eschatological virginity. First, John Paul carefully considers the context of Christ's words about marriage and celibacy in Matthew 19, verse 12. The Pope explains that Jesus looks at celibacy or virginity only as an exception and not as the rule for earthly life. That is, the Holy Father does not want everyone to become celibate priests and nuns. If everyone did, human history would end because there would be no more people. John Paul insists, on the basis of the immediate context of the words about continence for the kingdom of heaven in man's earthly life, one must see in the vocation to such a continence a kind of exception to what is, by contrast, a general rule of this earthly life. That this is what Christ emphasizes above all. Have you heard the old adage that the exception proves the rule? For example, the exception that during the Fridays of Lent we do not eat meat helps to highlight the rule that eating meat is really good. How so? Well, when you're eating mac and cheese and peanut butter and jelly sandwiches on Friday of Lent, you long for a good steak on Friday. Absence makes the heart grow fonder, as we all know. Considering the context, therefore, John Paul shows that eschatological virginity is intended to actually highlight the value of marriage. John Paul is adamant on this point, stating, the question of continence for the kingdom of heaven is not set in opposition to marriage, nor is it based on a negative judgment about the importance of marriage. In a sense, marriage and virginity, properly understood in the context of Christ's words, are the same, but different, because they underscore the same great value of marriage, but in two different ways, one positively and the other negatively. A second step the Pope takes to demonstrate the sameness yet difference between marriage and virginity is by speaking of their fruitfulness. Obviously, marriage bears fruit. Spouses beget natural children. It takes a little bit more effort, though, to perceive how virginity bears fruit, because it does so supernaturally and spiritually. Let me use my family as an example. Growing up in India and later in Little Rock, we were not particularly super devout Catholics. We went to Mass on Sunday, but that was it. No daily Mass, no confession, no retreats, no prayer groups, no scripture studies, blah, blah, blah. We did the spiritual minimum to get to heaven. But after I was ordained and became a celibate, a virgin, all that dramatically changed. My parents started attending daily Mass. My sister considered the religious life and now works in her church office. My brother teaches confirmation classes, and my sister-in-law is the youth director for her parish. Did you see what just happened? Before I embraced virginity for the kingdom, my family did the spiritual minimum. But after ordination, my family now does the spiritual maximum. This spiritual awakening in my family is the fruit of virginity for the kingdom. John Paul is not remotely interested in highlighting how virginity and marriage are different. Rather, he is intensely interested on how they are fundamentally the same. Both bear fruit. This is how you say eschatological virginity. The Pope's third step in doing a 360 is to demonstrate that both marriage and virginity are fueled by spousal love. The love of a husband and wife is operative in virginity. Nowadays, a growing number of people argue that if we got rid of mandatory celibacy, more men would join the ranks of the priesthood. Now, that may be true for others, but it is not true for me. As a teenager, I used to look at Jesus' suffering and death on the cross as an act of tremendous love for me. I believe all Christians do that. I suddenly felt a surge of desire to make a sacrifice out of love for Jesus. And being a celibate priest came suddenly to my mind. Why didn't giving up chocolate for the rest of my life suddenly come to mind? God's grace works in mysterious ways. Can you see how the sacrifice of celibacy propelled me to the priesthood rather than repelled me from it? That sacrifice was an expression of love. John Paul explains how spousal love lies at the heart of virginity, writing, "In this way, continence for the kingdom of heaven, the choice of virginity or celibacy for one's whole life, has become in the experience of the disciples and the followers of Christ the act of a particular response to the love of the divine bridegroom, and therefore acquired the meaning of an act of spousal love, that is, of a spousal gift of self, with the end of answering in a particular way the Redeemer's spousal love, a gift of self understood as a renunciation, but realized above all out of love. That is, the love that underlies both marriage and virginity are equally examples of the love between a bride and a groom. They are the same, but different. A 360, you might say. What then is the Pope's main message about eschatological virginity? I think he wants us to grasp how two seemingly contradictory realities on earth, marriage and virginity, will possess profound similarities in the eschaton in heaven. Therefore, everyone will indeed be virgins in heaven, as Jesus said in Matthew 22, verse 30, "For in the resurrection they neither marry nor are given in marriage." Nonetheless, everyone will also enjoy a mystical marriage with Jesus, the divine bridegroom. Virginity and marriage are two sides of the same coin. One side of the coin is earthly marriage. The other side of the coin is eschatological virginity. John Paul reconciles these apparent opposites by looking at the context of Christ's words, in which the exception proves the rule, at both how marriage and virginity bear fruit naturally and spiritually, and how the love of husband and wife motivates both states of life. If we can see how marriage and virginity, at least in these three ways, are the same but different, we can start to pronounce eschatological virginity. Praised be Jesus Christ.